So this session is Lighting Up SharePoint 2013 Extranet with BI. I'm Nathan Miller. I'm a collaboration TSP from Dallas, Texas.
Hi, my name is Richard DeZeriga. I'm a productivity architect at the Microsoft Technology Center in Dallas.
So for the agenda today, what we're going to go through is we're going to go through general planning for BI for Extranet. So stand up your Extranet. But what do you need to do to actually enable BI in those areas? We're also going to cover the user experience. What kinds of decisions do you need to make when you're doing your extranet scenarios? The other thing that we're going to talk about quite a bit is authentication and data access strategies. Because when you look at extranets and you look at kind of enabling BI for that, a lot of that comes around how's the user authenticating and how are we actually giving access to our data structures for that user or that group. So we're going to spend some time to talk about that today, too. So some general assumptions and some general, things that we're going to cover in here. With an extranet scenario, it's a pretty, it covers a lot of areas. So in this case, because we're covering data structures and reporting technologies, we're going to have a base assumption that that you guys have kind of been through the performance point and reporting services and the Excel services side. And we're going to focus some on user experience, but really focused on kind of the how do we expose that on the extranets and how do we solve some of the challenges that we might run into and what those might be. So the other thing I want to kind of ask is who in here has got an extranet set up today on SharePoint? Wow.
Nice.
Who in here is doing any type of reporting beyond kind of PDF publishing stuff out there? OK, good. Who in here is actually doing using SharePoint reporting or BI for anything internal and wanting to move it out to extranet scenarios? OK, great.
So actually, before we go to the next slide, one of the, I guess, caveats I'd make of this is for any of you guys that have gone down this road of trying to deliver insights on an extranet, probably the biggest challenge, and we'll highlight a lot of the challenges today, but one of the biggest challenges is dealing with user context and understanding, you know, if I need to secure what the user sees based upon who they are. So I just want to warn everyone that we're going to cover, and we'll cover it at like a very intro level for you guys to understand if that's kind of not your world, but we are going to do some coverage of claims in here. So that's going to be a really important concept when we talk about the different ways of getting context of a user. So just if you're going to be checked out and get upset because you got up at 9 a.m. to come to a session and you hear a bunch of stuff about claims, just to warn you now, that's going to be in here.
Yeah, and I guess with so many people having extranets out there, how many people are you leveraging ADFS or a public federation of some other sort on there? OK. All right, so we're first going to kind of go through some of the extranet basics and maybe why we look at SharePoint, why it's more interesting kind of this go around than what we've seen in the past. So from an extranet standpoint, what we're talking about today is whenever I talk with customers, we always kind of talk about what's their definition of an extranet. And so today we're really focused on people that are external to your organization, not people that are at home that are employees, but really your partners, your customers, your vendors, and working with your employees on some type of collaboration, or actually getting their reports or getting some of their usage scenarios on your extranet. So when we look at 2013, there's some really fascinating things that make extranets more attractive or really attractive on the platform. So the first thing that we've got is we've got the base reporting and dashboarding scenarios. So we've got the Excel services with Power Pivot and Power View. We have Performance Point to do the dashboards and kind of combine some of that stuff. And we've got reporting services as well to do that. But also what we've got is content publishing. So when you look at, hey, we want to have a great brand or we want to have a really great experience for our customers or our partners or vendors, and it's important to our marketing team or it's important because this is our revenue stream, we have all the web content management too. So you can have a well-branded extranet portal with all your BI scenarios in there as well. We also have, and this doesn't come up as much, but we have social and collaboration. So a lot of times you'll want your extranet because you're wanting to actually do two-way collaboration with your partners or your vendors. Maybe you want it as simple as they're submitting forms. We've got electronic forms in there that they can actually submit requests and kick off processes. Or maybe it's just scenarios where you want to have more of a community of your partners and kind of sharing information across other partners. And then finally, one of the other things that that we've done differently this go-around is we've changed the pricing model for the SharePoint for Extranet. Have you guys seen or heard that we've done a different pricing model with that? Everyone? Okay. Okay, so basically what, and I won't go into a lot of details because, you know, different scenarios mean different things, but basically in 2010 and 2007, we had a SharePoint for Internet Access license. So it was a fairly decent sized price to do that. In this go around, we have it's basically the SharePoint licensing. So whatever you license for SharePoint, you can actually have your external users hit those things and get, you know, the eCal capabilities of the reporting scenarios. So with the pricing changes and the ability to get all this access to the reporting scenarios, all of a sudden it makes a lot of sense to maybe extend our infrastructure into our partners and customers and start delivering some of our documents and data that way to them. So again, just kind of reiterate on the extranet audiences. So we've got organizations, people within our organization that would have access to that extranet. They might be publishing reports manually. They might be putting out reports out there for specific customers, or maybe they're managing, you've got in your organization, you've got customers assigned to certain account teams that are managing all their communications that way. And it's a much better tracking, much better security standpoint. We can actually do some additional things with it. So then we've got your partners and vendors. We might have a community. Probably in the BI scenario, that's probably a little less in this case. But then also another very popular one is just in customers. So we might have a B2C type of scenario where we're actually doing a lot more with maybe public IDs. And we've got some examples of that where, you know, maybe we don't have AD or we don't have ADFS. Maybe we're actually leveraging their live accounts or their Facebook accounts or their Gmail accounts to pick up their invoices. That's become more and more popular, and so having that actually federated and integrated, we can actually do those mappings as well, and we'll kind of show what that might look like during this. So some general challenges, and we're going to spend a lot more time on this, so I'll kind of quickly go through these. So the general challenges of extranet and BI scenarios in extranet, or I guess extranet in general, is authentication of external users. So we've decided that we've got a business need, we're going to stand up an extranet. So then you got to go talk to the security team. Well, how are you going to actually do that? And they're going to tell you that, we're going to need to have access to our directory structures, or we're going to need to have an external directory structure that's just for them, and we're going to have to do some kind of federation. So it becomes a big negotiation of how are we actually going to get our users, our customers, authenticated into our stuff. So we got to figure that out. The next thing we got to figure out is audiences and adoption. We got to put stuff out there that's worthwhile for them to come visit. And we also have to kind of keep track of how are they leveraging it, are they leveraging it, or are they still calling us up and asking for those reports or asking us to email those reports? Can we change their behavior and give them a better experience on the system? Securing and retaining data. So we've already decided, here's how we're authenticating to the users. Now we've got to decide on the data itself. What we put out there, how are we going to secure that? What if those partners leave us? What are they going to do with that? Or do we get into rights management? Do we get into scenarios where we need them not to take those things off the portal? You know, how are we going to handle those situations? So that's another big conversation that ends up happening in a lot of scenarios. Then also maintaining and provisioning. This is another one where after we agreed on, okay, we need users out here, we need this type of site structure, we also need other users internal and mapping that into the data sets, and we're going to have a multi-tenant model for our databases. So, and how are we actually going to have all that kind of combined? But the challenge that you have with that, once you've got all the different groups that are involved in this scenario to agree on how we're going to go about and do this, the challenge that you're going to have is, okay, now we've got a new customer. Do we have five different groups that are going to have to provision a new user, and then provision a site, and then provision a data structure, and then add to the model, and then add to... So we really need to think about the provisioning kind of up front, and maybe we even do some tooling around the provisioning. So we'll show a little bit about that and how you might be able to tool some of that side of it as well. And then we also need to decide on the right data. So if we have a kind of a data model, a combined data model, you know, how do we surface the right data to the individuals that are on the site and logged in? And then finally, a lot of our systems are actually legacy systems. They've got legacy reports. How do we surface that legacy information with the same level of security and data access that we need to get to for our users? So the first scenario that we're going to, and this is actually when we throw all the BI scenarios in there, obviously this kind of becomes more complex. So the first scenario that we're going to go through, Richard's going to cover, is you guys have probably heard a lot about Office 365 as we were kind of here at this conference. And one of the important scenarios for Office 365 is it's a very easy way to stand up and start collaborating with external users. So it's a great scenario for that. But there's also some BI components. So we want to make sure that you guys had a good understanding of what's available in Office 365 before we kind of jump into the on-prem scenarios as well.
Awesome. So like Nathan said, Office 365 has actually been a really popular choice for organizations looking to do extranets. You know, one of the reasons is you don't have to go through a lot of the technical security gymnastics of actually exposing information, right? We've done a lot of that work for you. You don't have to deal with, you know, publishing the site out via like a reverse proxy and all the security concerns that might come with that. So it's been really popular. The problem has been in the past, one of the big areas where Office 365 was lacking was BI. We really didn't have much insights that you could surface at all inside of Office 365. And I want to highlight, hopefully during this short demo, that's changed quite a bit. There's certainly still challenges in doing some things in Office 365 from a BI perspective, but I think that there's some interesting things that kind of make it very powerful as well. So I'm going to show you this from kind of two perspectives. One of the things that we're going to talk about today is when we talk about delivering BI, there's really two approaches I can do to securing what the user sees. So I can either secure by container, or I can secure at the data source. And we'll talk about both of these in a lot of detail. So the container would be is that I basically only let the users see specific containers that they should have access to. So that might be, it could be all the way down to an individual dashboard. So I secure that dashboard file or that Excel file. It could be a specific site that's theirs. But that's kind of the idea, is that we would secure by container. Securing by data would say that, you know, I go and I take, maybe we have a geography dimension, and we need to add very specific, dimensional level security permissions on a dimension like that, and it would automatically filter. So in Office 365, you're largely going to be in kind of the securing by container. And we'll kind of talk about what the challenges are of securing by container, but it's really going to be my primary model for doing things. So I'm here, I'm on kind of a Fabricam extranet site. If you look across the top of the screen, you see that I have a number of different maybe vendors that we work with. So, you know, this is kind of the, when I think about securing by container, if I have a finite set of very well-known vendors that I'm working with, I think securing by container is very a very easy thing to be able to accomplish. You know, if we had 5,000 vendors, probably not, right? So in this case, Fabricam works with four different vendors: AdventureWorks, Contoso, Litware, and Trade Research. One of the things that I actually have that's going on the screen here is, and we'll talk about this in a little bit more detail, is Office 365 is very supportive of the new app model. And that model kind of lives in a couple of different places. It lives in SharePoint, so we'll look at some SharePoint apps that I can use to go beyond what I could typically do in Office 365 for delivering insights. But also Office. So what you're seeing over here, you guys can all go get this. It's a free Excel add-in, one of the free Excel Excel apps. This is just a little bubble chart, and I can tie it to data that's in a worksheet. So this is actually Excel. I just happen to be, you know, putting it in as a web part on my landing page, and it's tied into some data that's been imported into the worksheet here to where I can, you know, kind of move these guys around and, you know, get a quick little bubble chart of maybe our leverage of our different vendors. And actually, if I were to go over here, I'm logged in as a vendor in another screen here. So I'm logged in as Allie, and Allie happens to work for Contoso. So here would be an example of securing by container, right? When I come in up at the top of my screen, you can see that I can only go to the root, or I can go to the Contoso site. So in this case, we created sites for each one of those vendors because we only had a handful of those. So in this case, I'll go ahead and go to Contoso, and I could see the types of things that have been surfaced up to me. So when I go in here, there's a few things that we'll see. You know, first of all, I have a list of you know, different insights, and also a lot of unstructured information. And I think that's kind of a key point when we talk about, you know, delivering BI, is that, you know, one of the benefits of SharePoint for delivering BI is that I can bring together some structured information and unstructured information. So in this case, what you're seeing is, first of all, we are supporting Power View, specifically Power View with Excel. So I can go build very rich insights within Excel and upload those into Office 365, and those are totally supported using Power Pivot as its back-end engine. Or just a regular table. So, you know, here I have a bunch of different, maybe these represent various distribution centers that we work with on with Contoso, and it's very interactive. And we'll look at some other examples of how Power View is a very rich experience. So Power View is obviously available to you guys. And so, you know, maybe what I'll do is let's go into maybe supply chain. So I have really the full extensibility of things that I might do inside of Excel. In this case, I can't pull down this Excel worksheet because of the permissions that we've set within the individual vendors that we work with. However, they have a lot of flexibility in how they might work with this data. So even within the browser, without me being able to let people pull things down, I can actually bring up the full data view of what, you know, is behind this. So behind this, and that's actually kind of a pretty key thing when we talk about Office 365, I'm typically going to be talking about some sort of cache data. Because it's going to be leveraging the Power Pivot engines within Excel in order to deliver that the data in here. You're not going to be able to take an Excel workbook and connect it to like a live feed and go and do data refreshes in here. But you know, I certainly do get Excel where I can go in and add different fields. I can use all my slicers, and well, error occurred there. Maybe not that one. But the idea is that I can do a lot of kind of data exploration within there. The other thing I might do is let me go in and I'll actually, I have two different warehouse Excel workbooks that I think are pretty key. So the first one in here I'll click on, and actually it's going to give me a warning when I come in here. It's going to say, wow, that's a big workbook. Unfortunately, we can't open it because it's larger than 10 megabytes. So just so you guys understand, there are some constraints around data volume and things like that I can work with within Office 365. Power Pivot does a really good job of being able to compress data at about a 10-to-1 ratio. So I can bring quite a bit into the workbook, but just understand that there are some constraints within Office 365 around that. So I will go ahead and go into maybe another one here. So this is a little bit smaller of a data set. It kind of highlights a few things that I might do within Excel services within the browser that I could deliver to my different vendors. So this is Power View. Hopefully you guys have seen the concept behind Power View is everything is very richly connected. So, you know, if I were to click on cell phones, everything else in the worksheet automatically is going to filter by that. Power View now supports things like being able to do mapping. So I can put maps on the screen. I can vary how the map and the data kind of mash up. I can do it by, you know, have different colors. I can do different sized bubbles, all based upon how my data is set up. And it's very, very easy to do that. I also have all the rich things that Power View has had in the past. So, you know, here I can do, the time-lapse view of my data. I can, you know, expand this out and see how things are changing over time. I can click on any one of the key, items here and see, you know, the track that it takes over time. So, again, very rich insights that we can deliver. You know, the key thing here is that within Office 365, we're largely going to be securing by container.
And on a cached set of data.
Just again, we're kind of assuming you guys have seen some of these things. So this would be more of kind of a traditional, charts with different slicers. We do kind of a histogram type of slicer for dates and times and things like that. And again, works perfectly within Office 365. I want to highlight maybe a few other things when we talk about delivering BI within Office 365. I think there's a few kind of tools that sometimes get overlooked when it comes to delivering insights to users that are available in Office 365. So we've seen a lot of Excel services so far. We've seen a lot of Power View within Excel. Another one that I'm a really big fan of, especially when we talk about working with partners, is being able to maybe leverage things like Visio. So Visio services is certainly supported within Office 365. A lot of people don't know it's very easy for me to connect Visio to data. So I can actually, in this case, I might show a warehouse and be able to, you know, zoom in and look at different stock levels within, looks like we're below forecast on product category B. But the idea is that these can be very interactive. I've seen customers do, like retail customers do, like planograms, all kinds of different things that I can do within Visio and also make those available to a user. And so in this case, you know, here is you know, kind of a mixture of different insights where I might have some Visio. These happen to be Excel again, but even though I'm just surfacing just the chart, not kind of the full Excel workbook, they're still interactive, right, if I wanted to go and look at something by another, you know, facet of the data. So this is some of the base things that I might get within Office 365 for delivering insights. I thought we showed a little bit around being able to do some things around the apps. So so far we've really concentrated on apps within Excel, so doing some of the Excel apps and how those surface nicely in Excel services. I wanted to show maybe another scenario here that I think is pretty key. So I'll go out here to All Site Content as an administrator. And one of the things I did here is I actually developed an app. This is actually leveraging some really cool technology that Microsoft Research has been working on. So my guess is you guys haven't seen this. It's pretty neat. And it's called MetroEyes. And I basically just built a SharePoint app using this technology. So if I go and click on the MetroEyes app, you can see here's my installed app. It's kind of gesture-based BI. So if I go in here, it takes me out to the app. If you guys look at the top of my screen, you can see I'm in o365apps.net. That is Microsoft's Azure tenant. So this is, in this case, developed as an Azure auto-hosted app. What I want to do just for fun, though, is this is what's cool about this technology. It's very, very touch-friendly. So I'm going to jump over here to a slate. This is all HTML5, so this could be one of the, you know, fruity devices. But in this case, I have just a little slate. And let me show you how cool that this technology is that I might develop as a way of delivering BI to in an extranet scenario. So I'm just using my finger here. I'll go and say, let's look at different regions and maybe expand that a little bit. Let's try that again.
So I think when we look at kind of the apps in Office 365, building apps is a good way of extending SharePoint and the capabilities that you have out there. So if you're actually doing reporting services and you're having that on-prem or you're having that stood up in Azure reporting services, that's a way that you can actually extend some of the reporting things. And you're not limited to the cached data model that we were talking about in the Office 365 scenario.
So having some connectivity issues on this one. So we'll go ahead and show it on there on the normal screen. So let's see. So in this case, I can basically just drag out different elements. So I might drag out region. And what's cool is I can kind of work with this in any way. So maybe I want to compare east and west. So I'll take east out here. I'll take west out here. And maybe I want to look at that by ship mode. So I'll just drag ship mode out here. Here's the gesture part of it. If I don't like this kind of heat map type of look, I can just click on gesture, and I'll draw a circle. Or actually, it looks like I draw a square there. I'll draw a circle this time. There we go, pie chart. And so I can just on the fly, I can change these between different things. I can even, you know, take this other one and change this to a line chart as well. And I can even go and, well, there we go. I can even pull them together. So, and again, it all works from a touch perspective. It's not really here highlighting this technology as much as the fact that I can take other capabilities and I can deliver those as apps within SharePoint. I can even make it look like it's a part of SharePoint, right? So if you had something that was, you know, some other BI platform, you could easily make a way to have that have a rich contextual experience within the browser.
Is that HTML5?
This is all HTML5, so it works on really anything. Cool.
All right, so one of the things that we're going to kind of jump through next is talking about what are the basics that we need to do when we set up an infrastructure for an extranet on-prem, and specifically to how to surface of our BI infrastructure in there. So here's kind of this is a general extranet architecture. So whenever we talk about what does an extranet need to look like, this is what you're going to see. We have actually very good guidance on this. If you go to TechNet, we've got a white paper on here's kind of all the roles that need to be out there, and here's how it basically works. So in this case, we've got UAG, or really a remote gateway. So you know, if you have, we see Juniper out there a lot. We see Citrix out there. So there's obviously quite a few ways that you can do this. But essentially, what it creates is a reverse proxy effect where you get some web single sign-on, you're logged into one place, and then you can actually publish multiple types of applications or reports out to this infrastructure. Some of the things that we've got internally, then, we've obviously have the SharePoint web front ends, the app servers, the SQL database, as well as maybe a content server or analysis server potentially in your corporate network as well. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to walk through just generally what that looks like and what the login experience is, as well as some of the challenges that we've got in this type of environment. So again, this is actually going to be extranet. This is kind of your basic extranet of we're going to use Windows tokens, and then we're actually going to log in with a web form and have that user have that experience. So I'm going to jump into the the servers first, and I'm going to kind of show you the services that are important to make this work on the SharePoint side. So if you end up running into any kind of data challenges or who had refresh issues on Excel services or Performance Point or Power Pivot in the past. Okay, so we'll kind of cover, you know, what we've changed in that as well in this environment. So first things first, and I'll walk through how this all kind of fits together. But when we log into SharePoint in 2013, it's what's called a Windows claim. Have you guys heard the Windows claim terms in your other sessions? Okay, so what ends up happening is user logs in. The user experience is very similar to what it was in 2010 if you're running just a Windows user. They log in, they either seamlessly log in or they log into a form. And then what happens behind the scenes is it actually gets converted into a Windows claim. So it's a claim service that actually is an intra-farm claim. So basically what ends up happening is that user is good for all the different services. What that allows you to do is not have to necessarily leverage Kerberos to jump around in the SharePoint farm. That's nice because Kerberos is fairly difficult to configure. So the other thing that happens, though, is your data in BI sets actually don't reside on the farm. You're going to make hops off the farm. So one of the first things that happens is when you make a call to a report data source or a report engine that's not part of that farm, it needs to actually take that Windows user that's in SharePoint and convert that back to a Kerberos token or convert that back to a Windows ID. So the first thing that's going to happen is in the SharePoint farm, one of the services that's a very important service is called the Claims to Windows Token Service. And so this token service here, that guy's job is to basically convert the logged-in user back to a Windows Kerberos user so that it can query your different data sources. And so that just needs to be running kind of all the time to make that conversion happen. The other thing that's important in this scenario is we need to have secure store enabled. So the secure store is an app that a lot of the BI services actually leverage. And we're actually going to extend that and use that in one of our other demos. So I'm not going to go into details on that. It's just secure store service. So when you go into the manage the services, Power Pivot, Excel Services, Performance Point, all leverage kind of an unattained account in here. Well, we can actually extend that and leverage that for some additional mapping of users that we'll kind of show you in some of the later demos. The other thing that we've changed, though, is in Excel Services, we actually have a new setting in there. And it's called effective username. There it is. So analysis services effective username, what that is if you ever had challenges of data refreshes because you had Kerberos configured incorrectly, and you negotiated with your admin, he swore that it was configured correctly, you said it's still broke, this actually fixes that scenario. So what this does is if you've got a user logged in, this says, hey, I'm going to take whatever user's logged in, and I'm going to pass that to the next service that gets called off the box. So I'll kind of show you what that experience looks like. So if I go ahead and log in to my portal, I'm going to pull up an Excel services that's connected to an analysis services cube. So one thing to note, too, is we branded this. We did some slight branding on this. And we actually branded different colors per different type of portal that they're at. A lot of times for extranets, it's useful for employees. If employees are accessing information, it's good to actually have kind of visual indicators of who's accessing that type of information. Because as you're publishing reports or publishing content out to different repositories and you've got vendors or partners, you might want to have some kind of visual indicator for letting them know, you know, what user access is in there. So when I open this, I'm going to get an error. This is because Kerberos isn't fully configured in this environment. And what's happening is it's trying to go out there and refresh that data real time whenever someone opens that cube up. So I'll go ahead and say OK and just let it refresh with the cache data. But now if I go in there and I actually say, hey, I'm going to turn on this effective username, this actually fixes that type of problem. So basically, without Kerberos being configured or installed, we can actually have that effective user pass to that next tier. I'll go ahead and save it. I'm going to get out of this. I'll actually just go back in there. OK, so now when I go in there, I shouldn't get any refresh issues. It automatically will pull based on it being Karen. It knows that Karen's a Windows user, and it knows that she's got mapped. So it actually refreshed that. And then if I hit data refreshes, I don't have any data refresh issues anymore. So I could query different kind of timelines, filter data, interact with that data sets, and it actually does different things in there. The other thing that this does, too, is based on Karen, I've got Karen in a specific group, so I can actually filter that data in that kind of dashboard scenario. So if I've got people from different regions and whatnot, we can just have one report out there and just have the different regions show up based on the user or the roles that they belong to. That's correct. Yep, that's what that effective username is for. It's for a Windows environment, though. It doesn't work in an ADFS environment necessarily. But certainly for Windows, it will pass it through without doing Kerberos. OK, so now I'm going to go in. So this is kind of, I'm still on in the environment, and Karen's a Windows user. I want to show you kind of the experience in. She's external to the site, and she's going to log into that environment. So we have a portal. We've got a branded login page, thanks to a friend of ours that was doing that yesterday. But we've got a login page. So one of the things that when I talk to customers about doing logins or web logins, because you really don't want the Windows pop-up happening for your extranet users. You really want a web login. But the nice thing that UAG and some of these reverse proxy technologies give you is the idea that, hey, everything internal, I treat that as a Windows user. So my guys know how to administer SharePoint as Windows users. They know how to do BI as Windows users. So it makes the conversion up front. So I'm a Windows user as soon as I log in. So we default the domain on here. And this is also more friendly for some of the different mobile scenarios. So we don't necessarily know what we're going to get from a pop-up standpoint. But this is that scenario where we've got the web, and then we convert it to a Windows login. So user experience standpoint, technology infrastructure standpoint, after that first login, it's going to be the same throughout our BI stack and throughout our SharePoint portal. But the one thing I wanted to point out here is all of the reverse technology, reverse proxy technologies, they do some level of rewriting of web content. And so if anyone's used Juniper or if anyone's used UAG, you'll run into certain snags in there of maybe Silverlight not working quite right in this type of scenario. You also run into potentially snags with some of the just web content in general might not parse correctly. So in this scenario, it's no different. So UAG is actually getting an update to support some of the 2013 BI stack. But when I go out here and I open up that document, I don't have the refresh issue, but you notice that the slicers didn't render right. And that's because we're actually needing to patch or update the UAG templates that we're using in this environment to render correctly on the 2013 stuff. So what kind of happened from a logic standpoint? I put this in there just so you'll kind of have it for reference if you download the deck. But what ends up happening is on the UAG side, we log in as UAG. When we actually go out there and when we're in the SharePoint farm, we have what's called a Windows claim that's jumping around into the SharePoint farm. That allows us to not have to worry about all the different configurations and security permissions between services. And then once it jumps off the box, you'll notice up at the top there, once we actually did that query for the backend data repository, it actually runs that claims to Windows token service. It looks at the current user ID and flips that back to a Windows token, because legacy systems or other Windows systems that don't necessarily have that SharePoint claim need to actually have Windows tokens passed to them.
Awesome. So we kind of highlighted earlier kind of the two primary ways of securing information. Another one that I kind of maybe failed to mention that you could possibly use on the Office 365 side is Office 365 does support audiences. So I could theoretically create groups of users and put those into audiences and actually use audience targeting on a single like web part page to be able to toggle different views of things. So that might be one way where I could kind of do it within Office 365 without having to secure the data. But let's kind of look at these in a little bit more detail. So talking about customizing the portal experience. So this first one, we're talking about kind of when we say dashboard versus site. When we say dashboard, we're really talking about securing at the data source so that I can have a single dashboard that users go to, and based upon who they are, they see completely different things. So obviously the benefits here are it's easy to provision something like this and maintain. I have a single place to go, so it's going to be way more supportive of having a large amount of different types of roles or groups of people that need to come in and see information. Some of the challenges are, think about like if I wanted to deliver some unstructured information alongside of this, right? So then I have to go back to doing item level security. When I had all these different containers and I redirected someone to their container, well, within there, it's automatically going to also secure all the unstructured information. So imagine I have a dashboard, but with it I have some like invoices that are in just a SharePoint library, right? If I did the single site approach to it, that I had dimensional level security, that unstructured information would be very challenging to deal with. security could quite possibly be an issue with this. And then also managing content by audiences could be overwhelming. And to be quite honest, you might not want to, you know, even end up with profiles for those types of users. On the other side of this is securing by container. Again, this is where each customer or entity has some sort of site or library or something that's secured specific to them. And so, you know, we, you know, end up building quite possibly over and over and over per entity, per customer. So that's really one of the big challenges is, you know, being able to, if I have to deliver maybe a new type of report to every single user, that could quite possibly be a big effort to be able to do. It's certainly from a benefit perspective, it makes it easier to deal with some of the challenges that come with securing data. We're going to get into more about securing data. So far, Nathan's kind of showed you the experience of using Windows claims. Another really popular one is SAML claims that we'll get into, and that's kind of a different beast. But you know, these are kind of some of the main, you know, areas of thought when you think about securing data that's delivered in an extranet. And this is really just a summary of this. So, and just a quick summary again of some of the reporting technologies that we've looked at. So Excel services, reporting services in Power View. I do want to, there is a little bit of confusion around this one, and I just want to make sure everyone understands some of the differences. So there is kind of two flavors of Power View, if you haven't picked up on that. So we have Power View that's part of what we call Excel and Excel services, to where I can go build it into Excel and I can go put it out on, you know, a library and let people be able to view it. There's also the first version of Power View was something that was delivered off of what we call a BI semantic model. So this is a new type of analysis services where I could go create what's called a tabular cube within analysis services. And ultimately I could go out and I could publish a connection file to that. And users ultimately could just go out to that connection file and say, I want to create a new Power View. Or they could go to an existing one, and they could even leverage Power Pivot data sources to create these Power View things. So they are kind of two distinct things. I just want to be clear of that. And you know, on-prem, obviously, I can do either. In our cloud, we really support the first one, the Power View within Excel. And then performance points. So we're not showing a lot of performance point today. Most of our big enhancements have been on some of the Excel side of things. But some of the keys that we've gone through, especially like what we just saw on Windows to Claims, where we use the effective username, that also holds true for performance point.
Yeah, and the other value of performance point too is when you're looking at reporting services and you're looking at Excel services, Performance Point's a great tool to actually leverage both. So you can actually have a dashboard that has multiple types of structures surfaced up in it and have similar views or filters passed to each of those.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, a lot of times we have customers ask, you know, what do I use for which scenario? And Performance Point is really superior in mixing different types of insights. It's also, I would say, a superior tool for delivering scorecarding, right? It's actually, if you think about its birth, it came from what was once called Business Scorecard Manager. So it has really rich scorecarding capabilities with that. Let's see. So just a few other considerations when we talk about, you know, multi-tenant or multi-repository for customer data. How is that customer onboarded? So, you know, whether it talks about, you know, thinking about a training plan to get them, you know, understanding the experience of that extranet and how insights are delivered. Also kind of the provisioning of the user. So understanding how we're going to provision those user accounts and secure those containers. So other things that you guys might want to think about when we talk about these scenarios. Yeah, so we're going to actually kind of jump into SAML claims a little bit here because I saw a number of hands that it raised when they talked about they're using ADFS today for using their extranet. I think we'll see more and more of that kind of moving into the future, and maybe more scenarios where maybe it's not even ADFS. It might be something completely separate. It might be like Nathan was saying, using something like a Live ID or who knows. So what I wanted to do is I want to give you guys, I'm going to go like Disney simple here when we talk about how claims work. And the way I want to do that, I want to kind of illustrate it by actually going to a site and showing you the idea of claims. So, you know, if you think about what we're trying to do when we talk about claims is saying that we need basic information about, and we need to validate some basic information about a user. And that's what happens when you go and you log into, you know, what's been kind of a traditional SharePoint experience. You go in, and if it's Active Directory authenticated, Active Directory, it's going to go out and try to validate the user against that. What claims is saying is, instead of being so strongly tied to, say, Active Directory, let's just kind of define what information we need to validate. Maybe we need to validate a user's login name, display name, and email address. Maybe that's all we need. And then we can go pick which things we trust to get that information. So we could trust Active Directory as a source of it. We could trust something completely separate. And I think this is a really good illustration of that. So this is actually a SharePoint site. It's called CNG Now. It's a site that helps. It's kind of an advocacy site for compressed natural gas. And it's a SharePoint 2010 site. And in this case, because it's a kind of a community type of thing, they allow their users to log into it. So if you could go out to this today, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and sign in. And in this case, what it's going to do is CNG Now, they have no interest in keeping usernames and passwords. They really don't. They just want to be able to deliver their advocacy information. But they do want to know who a user is. And so in this case, they said, let's just trust information from certain sources. And so in this case, they trust Facebook and Twitter. So what I'm going to do is I'm already a member, so I'm going to go out here and click Facebook. And actually, in this case, I untrusted the app, so it would stop me here. And ultimately, what you see here is if you look, it's saying this app wants your basic information, your address, your birthday, and your location. Think of that as a set of claims that CNG Now is asking from Facebook, right? That's the basic information they need. And in this case, CNG Now says, I trust Facebook. I trust Twitter for that information. So that's the idea, right? It's kind of adding a layer of abstraction. So I'm going to go in here and log in with Facebook. Looks like it also wants to post on my behalf. Why not? And then it's going to redirect me back to CNG Now with some of that claims information. And so now when we go in, it knows who I am. If you look up at the top of the screen, it says, hello, Richard DeZeriga from Texas. So remember, it asked for my location, asked for my name. It's able to get that basic information. So hopefully that illustrates it. I think that's kind of like a really simple way of illustrating kind of what claims does and how it works. So, you know, as you go to look to deliver, an extranet, it might not be an Active Directory scenario. It might be something else. And we'll kind of walk through some of those. But hopefully that kind of sets the stage for some of the same old things that we're about to jump into.
So we saw in the first demonstration that we were talking about kind of just the normal Windows mode of doing it. In this one, we're actually talking about leveraging SAML mode. And in this case, when you're doing a vendor partner corporate federation, we'll kind of show the first scenario is leveraging like an ADFS. So if they've got a directory, we've got a directory, we could trust theirs, and they could pass our users. The great scenario about this is when we're actually using them to maintain the users, we're actually kind of securing everything potentially by roles. So they have maybe admin roles or they have marketing roles. And they'll send those over, and we can actually secure content based on those situations. So a couple things to kind of point out. In our case, we're actually leveraging, the demo I'm going to show you, we're leveraging ADFS. We've got a trust for local users. But in most cases, like Richard mentioned, is we're usually not going to store those users, and that's why we're federating. Those users are being managed or being self-serviced. They have passwords somewhere else. All we care about is who's the user and what rights do they have in our environment. Well, that actually brings up specific challenges when we're looking at business intelligence. So we've got some that are our Windows claims. So we've actually got our security. We know how to do that. But maybe we've got other scenarios where we're trying to secure content based on legacy systems or on proprietary systems. Or maybe we're using claims of other sorts with these other systems. So we need kind of ways to say, hey, I've got a user coming in. They're coming in not with a Windows account, or they may be coming in with a Windows account, but it's not necessarily one. It's a claimed account. And then I also have all these other systems that need to actually have that account translated. Maybe I'm passing it all the way through, or maybe I need to translate it to something else as I'm passing that through. The other thing I wanted to show in this demonstration is when we talk about web forms and web logins, we showed the UAG experience. There's also the ADFS experience. ADFS also has a default prompt form, and I want to show what that experience looks like and what that means once it's actually logged in. Okay, so I went to an extranet, so I've got extranet.tp.lab, and in this scenario, if we have two providers enabled in any environment, this is what you get by default, by the way. Usually what you do is turn it off. I just wanted to show that if you turned on a trusted provider like ADFS, what ends up happening is you have a picker. So there's kind of two ways to handle this, is you do it by zone. So in the SharePoint extranet world, you would usually have two zones. One would be a Windows zone for my users that are internal to the corporation. They're actually putting content out there. The extranet zone would be just for ADFS users. So when they log in, they would actually get this experience. They wouldn't actually see the sign-on prompt. And you could actually even customize the sign-on prompt if you needed to have two sets of types of users logging in. So in this case, I'm actually going to log in with Karen again. So again, this is the default out-of-box ADFS form that could be customized or branded if you wanted it to be.
If you look, it's DC01. It moved him out to the ADFS server at that point. Just like we went out to Facebook when we looked at CNG Now.
That's a good point. So SharePoint basically it has what's called an STS. And so in this case, we've actually got ADFS that it's sending to. So the challenge that we've got is we have to publish our ADFS external to the site as well. So we can't just have our SharePoint site. We have to have any other sites that we're logging into internally published as well. So in this case, I'm actually logged in with Karen, but she's not a Windows user now. She's actually potentially coming from a partner. So I need to map that user to an internal Windows user. So with our BI stack, when you look at any of the different technologies that we're querying, we need to translate it to a Windows user for analysis services to work right or SQL services to work right. So it really comes down to how do we best translate that. And you kind of have three methods of doing that. In this case, I'm still interested in individual users. So I want Karen to be basically mapped to an individual account. So I'll kind of show how that mapping would work. In another scenario that we've got, if I actually just wanted to have, hey, everyone just needs to get in there and we'll do the filters ourselves based on information, we can do that as well. But in this case, you notice that it refreshes fine. If I wanted to kind of select specifics, I've got still the region that Karen's in, and I can actually filter and specify any kind of specifics on that as well. So again, very similar, so I'll have kind of the same experience. And the way I ended up doing that was I'm leveraging the secure store in SharePoint. So the secure store in SharePoint is what I said is leveraged on Excel services and on Performance Point for doing kind of general querying of information for unattended account. But a lot of people forget that a secure store is actually another way that we can actually translate users. So if you have multiple repositories and they have multiple user IDs, it's a good way to actually have those legacy mappings so you can very quickly get repositories information to kind of store it up and sent to your extranet scenario. So I've got a couple different areas in here, and I wanted to show kind of both ways of doing this. And so we've got two kind of scenarios that Secure Store does. The one is a group-based security. And what that means is I've got one set of credentials for all the Windows users that are in that group. So I can actually have a Windows group or a Windows set of users assigned to this group, and then they actually have one user set to it. So basically what that means is on my analysis services model or my SQL query, I might actually have a specific customer coming in. Maybe we've got Contoso coming in there, and they'll have one Contoso user. So that's kind of the group security model. And that's kind of a container-based type of model that we'd be using, because with our data models that we've got, we'd actually have to point to an individual connect string with that one specific group model to it. If we want to have more of a dashboard set, we would actually use the individual model. So in this case, where we've got extranet, we got extranet data, I can actually set credentials on here. So if I wanted to set an individual user, I can specify one for each user. And this is claims aware. So if I have a person coming in through ADFS, I could say, for example, minus. And when I map him, I can actually say, hey, this is the ADFS user that's coming in. And when he comes in, here's the Windows user that he's going to map to. And what we tend to refer to these as are shadow accounts. So in this case, if I had individual users, I can actually assign, I should still assign this to a group account. So if I still wanted to do a dashboard and have one connection string, this would be a great scenario where I have that connection string, the app, and then I can actually have one user account still. But it allows me to do still the dashboard scenario. But in this case, I actually have an individual account for him. So what ends up happening then is whenever I leverage that connection string for Performance Point or for reporting services or for Excel services, it will actually replace that user that's logged in with my Windows user that's mapped to. And the data filters will actually filter based on the user that's coming in.
I mean, when do slides are.
Yeah. So in the SAML claim world, with ADFS, the structure is slightly different. So what ends up happening is when we log in straight to the Windows, the SharePoint environment. That actually bounces us out to have the ADFS form that actually puts the login information in there. Then what ends up happening is when we go out to make the call to the external data source, we actually go look up that data ID and actually flip that to a Windows claimed ID.
So I thought we'd take maybe put a few of these pieces together. So hopefully you guys saw that this, you know, what Nathan kind of went through with the first kind of SAML claims demo was where, you know, when we do Windows, the Windows token service, just a regular Windows claim, that is really kind of normal user context. I don't really have to do a lot of fancy things other than check the checkbox to pass effective username. In the SAML world, it is going to be a concept of mapping. So you saw him how he could set up mapping for those ADFS users. What's interesting is it's no different if it's ADFS or if it's Facebook, right? There's really not a lot of difference there. As long as I'm doing that mapping, I can still have someone log in, and I could map maybe someone by their group that they're in, right? So maybe if you're from Texas, you get a certain experience. So what we thought we'd do is kind of put a few of these things together. So I'm going to jump over. We have a public site as well that's very similar to what CNG Now would do. This is actually going to use Azure ACS. And Azure ACS is basically our STS at this point. And it can actually go off and then leverage Facebook or something else. In this case, we've configured it for Facebook. So let me go over here. And I'm going to go to. In this case, we haven't turned off the other experience. We have Windows on mainly so we can go in as an admin and be able to update our environment. But the idea here is I'm going to pick Azure as my source to provide those claims.
Yeah, and I think one of the important things in both these scenarios is that it doesn't take any code to do this. So whether I'm using Facebook integration and those IDs or whether I'm using ADFS, we didn't write any code to actually make that transformation. So we used a secure store, we used ACS or ADFS. It's a PowerShell script that you can download in both scenarios and have those users come through and be authenticated.
So I'm going to go ahead and log in. When I log in here and it actually, again, I'm out at Azure, or actually at Facebook at this point, but when it actually takes me back into our public site here, what we did is we went to a screen just so we could pull and actually see some information off the Facebook Graph API. So what it's going to do is make some REST calls and go based upon the information that we want from Facebook. It's going to actually go and make some calls and say, oh, let's go get his location. Let's go get this. Let's go get that. And so that's what you'll see here. So I'll go ahead and...
Yeah, and so one of the important things to note is if you're using any of the public federations, whether it's Live IDs, Gmail accounts, Facebook, all of them have sets of permissions that you can ask for. So you can really take advantage of additional information that your users might be able to give you as they're accepting rights to those apps.
So now you notice that it's redirected me back into the public site at this point. If you notice, we're doing a couple of different things in here. We might be doing a mixture of securing by who the user is, but also securing by container. So it actually picked up on the fact that my location is Texas. And if you look at the top here, the redirect actually took me into a tx.aspx page, right? And so I can actually mix some of that unstructured information. That's the key, right? Is again, I might be able to secure my structured data all day long just in a single report, but it's the unstructured information that becomes a little bit more interesting. And so, you know, here we might want unstructured information like a picture of the flag of the state or something like that. In this case, we're showing that Texas is the center of the world, but sorry.
No offense for the people not from Texas.
Yep. But also data, different data feeds. So you can see I have a tabular model data source there that I might, you know, go and create PowerView, different reports off on the fly. We have some of our, you know, different chart reports over on the left. But the idea is it mixes both of those worlds in a SAML claimed scenario. So hopefully this gives you a good example of some of the things that you can do, really push the boundaries of delivering BI within extranets.
So just kind of some recap slides of what we saw, and then we'll open it up for questions. So extranet authentication, really these are your mechanisms for doing that. So Windows, you use a reverse proxy method. SAML, you're going to use ADFS, or you're going to use some other secure store like the ACS that we saw. FBA, we're kind of going away from, so you're really going to pick one of the first two is the options that you've got. There are some certain scenarios where FBA makes sense and still makes sense, but just be aware of that. So there's some other data access challenges. You know, when we look at, we really didn't talk into the detail about cross-domain trusts and shadow, some of the different scenarios for why else you'd need shadow accounts. But those are still very legitimate scenarios, merger situations where, hey, we've merged with two companies, maybe we still want to use ADFS, and then do that. The patterns for doing that are going to be very similar to what we just saw here. As far as authentication methods, we can leverage Secure Store. We've got the new effective username. And then if you're using reporting services or you're using Performance Point, you can also have that custom data field for passing that user. That works very similar to effective username as well. If you want to have offline access for your data, so some extranets, they want to have users access the data offline or actually still have a live connection. You can publish the data pump from Analysis Services, and that gives you the ability to actually have open that data in Excel and still have a live connection for that data feed. And we're starting to see more and more customers doing that with their vendors and partners for more interactive collaboration and ad hoc reporting. The other thing that we wanted to just briefly touch on is legacy report integration. So one of the scenarios that Richard showed, he actually used the new web app model for doing some of that. And that's certainly a possibility for publishing or interacting with some of the reports and publishing that to your portal. But the one thing to make sure you understand is that legacy report or that legacy report infrastructure also needs to be published in the same mechanism that the other portals being published at, because you're going to have potentially two different security contexts. So you're going to have one for the windowed-in report, whether you do it through the app model or whether you do it through just publishing. But there's ways around that through the reverse proxy and also through the app model as well. So this is the end of the sessions. So we just kind of put this as references for other areas that you might want to kind of touch on, just to have if you download the deck. And then we will say that please fill out your evals. We get a lot of good information and feedback from that. As we do different sessions, we actually tweak the messaging over time, and we certainly want to get more information out there about these types of scenarios. So if you've got other types of scenarios you want to see, we'll try to get more blog entries and some more guidance on some of those different scenarios as well. And if there's any questions, feel free to ask any questions. Yeah?
So what was the name of the plugin you showed that we did it for Excel?
with the plugin
with the circles.
So there's a couple of different plugins we showed. If the first one we showed that was in Excel was it's called Bubbles. So you can go out to the store and there's Bubbles. We have a lot of kind of really cool BI stuff that's out in the store right now, and they're all free for the most part from what I've seen so far. There's one for like geospatial type of things to where I can pull up, you know, maps and be able to, you know, map data on top of those. So yeah, Bubbles was the specific one, and it's really easy to work with.
And I think you're gonna see that model grow a lot. That's the value of the web apps in 2013 is you're gonna keep seeing more and more data feeds and data apps in there. Yep. It's not, so you can use that pattern in 2010 as well. Yeah, the thing I don't know for sure, I'm sorry, is in 2010, I'm not 100% sure if it supports the claim mapping. But I can certainly check that out if you want to send me an email. It's nathan.miller@microsoft.com. Yeah. Anyone else?
Thanks for getting up early, guys. Really appreciate
it. Thanks a lot.